Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show today dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. Hopefully that's what you're into, because that's what I'm into. And if you would like to join in, you can by calling in at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. For those of you in Canada, 888-815-9756. Last week, we had a little technical problem. Actually, the station that we go through here had a little bit of a problem, and we weren't able to get fully on the air. We could have maybe reached some of our listeners, but probably the majority of them would not be able to get on. So they reran an earlier show. I hope you enjoyed that. And for this week, we're doing what we were going to do last week, which makes sense, I guess. And that's, we're going to talk about what is evil on a very large scale as it involves itself with nations and with the world in general. Now, of course, evil has many different faces to it. And for those of you who are interested in its full complexion, you might want to look up evil in Life's Hidden Meaning, Chapter 8, and read about it in there, because in there I do describe it in more detail. However, because we are able to narrow it down from its just general category where it affects a lot of us in different ways, I'm going to talk about tonight, I'd like to anyway, deal with it in terms of how it is affecting nations and the world in general. And we live in a world today that is, as unfortunately it has been for eons, plagued by evil on a large scale. But the scale has grown just as nations in size and scope have grown, and as the world in size and scope has grown. So evil from 1,000 years ago, while there was obviously large countries, etc., they weren't as large in general, and they weren't generally as inundated on a consistent basis, at least as some countries are today. But it really depends where and when in time we're talking about it, because there certainly have been terrible periods of time where evil did inundate large areas of our world, except the whole world itself wasn't really involved because it was centered maybe around parts of certain elements of what we call Western civilization or Chinese or Eastern civilization or Japanese. So it really was more localized than what we consider on a worldwide scale today. Okay, so first of all, let me define what I mean when I say the word evil, because I think that, as you probably know already if you've listened to the show before, that is that I like to define as much as I can what I'm trying to explain. And sometimes I succeed, and sometimes people go, huh? Well, if you go, huh, you can always give me a call. I'll see if I can redefine it. But I define evil as the following. Evil is a condition that exists only in humanity. It is not a condition that exists in kingdoms lower than humanity, other than how humanity fosters and helps it to develop. And it isn't a condition that exists in beings that are greater in development and consciousness than humans are, if you so believe in those, or think they exist, which I do. But in these beings, they have overcome what is the cause of evil. And you might say, well, okay, then what is the cause of evil? Well, the cause of evil is actually our consciousness and the contradictions that exist within it in human beings. You see, we have the ability to sense our own creator, whereas anything that is lower than us in development, even orangutans and even chimpanzees or whatever, they are lower in consciousness than us, and they cannot sense their own creator, or God if you prefer. And although they may do good things and love one another and animals and of similar type, etc., and be very close with us even, they could be our pets, as an example. But they can't sense their creator, so they don't respond to their creator, such as developing churches and areas of places of worship, and they don't really seek this Creator as a part of their life. And they don't seek to grow more of their Creator in themselves and in others. But humans do, because we have two senses, if you're familiar with chakras or centers, that help us to sense our Creator. That's the heart and the crown, some people call it head. Chakras help us to understand how to grow more, both, in those two centers of our Creator. Well, because we have these senses, this is going to sound odd. We also have a propensity to sometimes deny the Creator's, we'll call it, existence, or sometimes it's just the control of this Creator over our own existence. And it's a kind of illogical and sometimes paradoxical, that's like two things that support each other but still don't make much sense, situation. And it goes something like this. I'll try to make this as simple as possible. If someone is aware of their Creator and things don't go quite the way they might like them to be, they might say, well, my Creator is much, much more powerful and bigger and greater than I am, and things are still going to hell. And if they are in my life and I don't like it, then I don't like the Creator that created me and the circumstances I'm in. So it's sort of like a misunderstanding, actually, of the nature of what the Creator is that causes this unusual paradoxical response in human beings only to reject the God that they actually think may be there. And that causes evil. Now you could say, what is he saying? I thought evil is this anti-God stuff. I thought it's against God. People who are evil should obviously think God doesn't exist and they're all atheists. Well, not so, I'm afraid. Evil begins as a process of rejection of someone's actual thought that God does exist. Rejection of the God, and sometimes eventually wanting to believe that God doesn't exist because they've already rejected this God. But it still can't exist in itself. Evil cannot exist in itself if there wasn't this sense that we have of our own Creator. Because then we could never reject something that we couldn't sense, and we would never have any idea it existed. And whether you've reached the point in evil's process where you no longer believe there is a God, and or if before you've reached that point, and you're still evil, you believe that God's really got done a bum steer for you, not doing the right thing, so you get angry at this Creator for not doing what you wanted to be doing, then you turn to what I call the dark side. Now, what does this evil want to do? It wants to destroy an element of what God is. And this is very, very strange, because we're going to talk about it in terms of terrorism and people who have fanatical religious ideas, and you're going to say, well, that doesn't make sense either, because what if somebody had a strong religion, then how could they be doing evil things? Yet we know that they are. Many people do. And yet, so then you have to explain it, and I will. I hope to do that. That's why tonight's show is going to be really perplexing, but I hopefully by the end of it, quite interesting. Okay, so making it simple and going back to what I was saying, for those who are in the rejection process, they are actually finding that the general principles of what makes the Creator God does not fit their life, and it isn't making it work for them. So they reject that, and they may fall into radical ideas of a God that doesn't fit at all what God could be or is, or what most of us sense God to be, but they may still believe in some being they call God, but yet be excessively evil, because what they want to do is, in an odd way, they want to destroy the growth of the real God that they may and likely do sense, even if it's subconscious. They want to destroy this God because they're not getting what they want, whatever it is. They think that they're getting a bad shake in life, and they think that it's God's doing, ultimately. But they may choose to buy into and either create or assume the beliefs of some God that more fits their desires, their needs, and reject a more universal and a more loving, a more creative, a more freedom-producing God. Very interesting. Freedom becomes a very important part of this process. Now, have I confused you? I hope not. But if I have, again, give me a call. We'll talk about it. All right. Let me go a little further with this. So I've thrown out a lot of paradoxical, I could call them, concepts. But that's to kind of whet your appetite and get you to think more, because that's obviously one of the ideas that this program is about. Get people thinking, even if they don't think my way, it's okay, because, you know, that's what thought is sometimes you got to have differences. And so here we go. If someone that is human, obviously, has a perplexing circumstance, and it seems important to them that they have an outcome that is in their particular interest and direction, and if their control in the situation is limited, they may seek or want to believe that this is the result of their creator, because they can sense that they have one, and it may trouble them that their creator is unfairly and maybe even in a punitive way treating them. Now, they could reject that concept of their creator and come up with a new concept that sometimes produces a creator that says, okay, the creator really wants me to go out and kill everybody and destroy everybody that's causing me grief. Well, you could understand how that could happen. You could see how that could be. But that's also the process of evil, because it's the denial of the real creator that they are seeking to avoid and eventually to destroy. Catching up with that? I hope so. Okay, so that's one example of how this paradox of ideas creates evil in human beings and how it can be fostered and continue to grow in people who may claim to be religious and even have a strong belief in some form of a God. Now, what are the principles of God that I'm referring to that people have a sense of? The first is that God seeks us to have freedom in thought and action. The freedom does not mean we can do anything we choose, because God also creates, we'll say, a universe that's based upon principles of and laws that it has chosen in how to grow more of itself through growing life. So if you go against those principles of growing life, you're going to end up hitting a wall, and it's going to be a fairly serious bang. And so each of us are free, but we're also free to hit the wall if we choose to. And we're free to think almost ad infinitum. So thought is not the problem. It's when you take action on the thought that goes against the principles. Now, what are some of the principles? The principles are that we are not supposed to be interfering with the freedom of others to think, and in terms of others taking action, we are only to interfere with the actions of others who are trying to destroy the freedoms of others to think and or take actions. So you see, the interesting thing about this is that freedom is a responsibility we all share with our Creator. I hope that made sense. I hope I didn't say that too quickly. Some of you might be saying, huh? What did he say? Okay. So, ultimately, we share in the responsibilities of what our Creator created for us, whether or not we choose to even recognize that Creator, the responsibilities still befall upon us. And should we ignore those responsibilities, well, guess what happens? Not so good things, karmic things happen, that create a lot of stresses and forces in our life that can be destructive to our very existence and to those we care about. And this is part of the problem. Because when someone, let's say, steps on freedoms of others, and then refuses to recognize that they're doing that, and then negative things happen as a result of that, then they may blame God, who only wants us to be free. I hope you're following that. That's a little complicated. Now, what else does God want for us? God wants us to be, we'll say, a universally loving and good in the sense of being able to help others to become loving in wise ways that help others to do the same. Again, taking responsibility for everybody in this case and not just giving to those we like or care about in some way. This is God's principle. It's not necessarily the principle that everybody else lives by. Some people say, well, I only want to love those that are close to me, or those who share the same religion as I, or those who are willing to do certain things with me in certain ways. That's a problem, because that's not one of the principles of God. Not the God that I'm trying to describe to you. It may be a principle of a God that someone chooses to believe in, or it may be principles that someone just believes in themselves, irregardless of what God they believe in, if any. So you see, this is a problem, because if someone says, well, I'm loving my family, I love my children, I love my wife or husband, and I love my friends, but I don't love everybody. Well, guess what? Karmic consequences again. Pressures and problems take place in life. Difficulties arise. And then, for some people, they start condemning God. They say, well, wait a second. This is God's fault. Because they're not taking responsibility. They're not seeing themselves and others as souls, which is what souls do, is they take responsibility. And they say, oh, it's God's fault. And, of course, they could do a couple of things. They could reject God completely, or they could go find a religion that says, you only have to love the people in our religion. Everybody else is going to hell. Some people do that. Unfortunately, that doesn't lead to them discovering the nature of God in its completeness. It may lead to a small fraction of discovering some things about God as their religion dictates, but unfortunately, it may eliminate most of the elements of God. Uh-oh. And all of these things can lead to evil. Now, does that mean if someone joins a religion that says anyone who's not a member of the religion is going to hell, they are evil? No. It does not mean that. That's called converse logic, and it doesn't necessarily mean that that's true. Although, certainly, it opens the door for that possibility, and it's the reason only humans, with their paradoxical thinking, can create evil. And so, in an odd way, it's the nature of our thinking that produces this strange condition of wanting to destroy the growth of our Creator, which is life itself, and to do so in weird ways, which we call evil. Very interesting stuff. Well, I'm going to go into more of this when we come back from break. But I want you to all be thinking about what I've said, because I've said a lot in a short time, as I usually tend to do. And I know I go a little fast sometimes, as I do like to cram in as much as I can in the 55 or so minutes that we are together. But still, I'll be back in a very short time. I've heard that we have shortened our commercials to just a little over a minute. That isn't much at all. So we'll go to commercial right now. And when we come back, I will continue telling you more about the nature of the big side of evil.
Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yes, and tonight we're talking about the big picture of evil, how it affects nations, and we'll call it the world in general. The first part, I was just trying to define what evil is, because it's so hard for people to understand it. I want to make a suggestion at this point that evil really has two ways of keeping itself, we'll say, integral, if you can use that word and talk about evil. And that is that it, first of all, wants to keep us thinking that it doesn't exist. And one of the rationalizations is that people who do terrible things are really just a product of their environment, bad upbringing, never got enough love as children, and on and on. All that may be true, by the way, but it isn't the reason they're necessarily evil. And then the... If someone discovers that evil kind of does exist, its other way of operating is to convince those that do believe evil exists that it's ubiquitous and so powerful and everywhere that it should, those people then tend to shut down all of the freedoms of everybody, and it's sort of like evil wins on either side, you might say, because since freedom is so critical as part of God's own thought process, if you start destroying freedom, then that in itself becomes an evil. You can see the difficulty in dealing with this problem. Okay, so I kind of covered what evil is in general. Hopefully I gave you a flavor for it. There's a lot more to say, but, you know, that's not really what the show is about. It really is about what evil is on a big scale, and to cover all of the elements of it would be too much for one show. On a big scale, evil is attempting, especially in this world. Now, we have to be specific to Earth because there are some differences if we go from one planet to another about how evil can manifest. But we're not talking about that either tonight. We are talking about Earth, and we're talking about us here now. Not as we were maybe thousands of years ago, or maybe as we might be in the future, but I'm talking about really today. Okay, so this is like current event evil. And if we are looking at it from that standpoint, evil today operates in the following fashion. It is turning, and has been for about 100 years, into a much more mental activity than it is more of an emotional activity. So in the past, if we go beyond 100 years ago, the majority of evil was based upon astral or emotional issues that people have. And the motivation of getting people to become emoting evil feelings and then activities that came from evil feelings. That dominance has been shifting over hundreds of years, but that dominance now is changed to a mental side to evil. Now, what is mental evil, and how does that compare to, we'll call it the astral side of evil? Mental evil is really an evil that the best way to describe it, I describe as propaganda. It is the changing of people's thought processes in mass for the purpose of being destructive to all of the nature of God, which means that the concepts of unconditional and universal types of love being wiped out, as well as freedoms wiped out at the same time. And so that ultimately, on a national scale, what this means is that countries, instead of helping foster creativity, which comes from freedom, and purpose and sacrifice, all of which come from freedom and from the first part of our Creator's mind, it does the reverse. It causes people to become non-creative. It causes people to, and not non-creative in a personal sense, but non-creative in a legal sense, and in what countries usually do, which is restrict through laws and through forces beyond the person. And I'll give you an example of this. One of the areas that I've come into contact with is like the FDA, and they're being, as an extension of our government, part of the things that they do actually destroys the ability for some people to be creative, because they restrict the use and the sale of things that aren't really harmful for people, but and maybe helpful, maybe very helpful, but they want to control them, and even they want to do so for powerful interests such as drug companies. Now, when you look at that from that standpoint, and you see that that's the case, then you can say, well, hey, that's like a darkness. Hey, there could be an evil going on there. And that's true. You see, that's how it works. Now, that's a very small example. And I'm only using it in terms of the U.S. because people live here, and it may be important to them. But for those of you listening outside the U.S., I'm sure you know of many issues in your own country where the government restricts freedom, which then destroys creativity. And the restriction on freedom isn't for benefit. It's for control and power, and it doesn't achieve any positive results. Does that mean that the government shouldn't restrict certain things? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Quite the opposite. This is the problem with anything that is we're talking about in a mental sense. There has to be truth. Once you get truth, you get rid of the bullshit, as I call it. You get rid of the stuff that is really nonsense that is going on behind the scenes. Truth is the light. Truth is the virtue of the mental world. And if we don't really get to truth, then we can't get rid of evil. And truth is also motive behind what are people doing. And in this case, governments and arms of governments. And it's very critical for us to get to the truth, because without truth, we are not going to be able to see the real from the unreal. And consequently, then evil has its ability to grow, particularly through propaganda. Propaganda is the changing of truth to the convincing of people of ways in which they and others are going to lose freedom. And it's a consistent battle. And unfortunately, at the present time, the dark side has been winning this battle. It may continue to do so for a while. So evil has been growing in a mental sense all around us. Government agencies promoted. And who is the government agency? Well, it's government agencies are composed of people who want to sometimes be over-controlling. And they grow from this seed of need to over-control. And it's an individual nature, but it's also the philosophy of the agency and the government itself. So over time, on a national scale, you can have a government that says, we believe in truth, justice, and the American way. You've heard that one before. And we believe in the Constitution, and we believe in all these amendments that give us rights, etc. And then they through propaganda and through, we'll call it untruths, they consistently take these away and erode them to the point where there is no such thing any longer. The fact that we have a written constitution does not protect us. Written things is better than non-written things, believe me. But it isn't a protection because propaganda can convince people something is true that isn't true. And this is being used every day as a weapon. It has really come to its forefront throughout the two world wars in the last century, and was used through the Cold War in particular with devastating results on both sides. So we really have to be concerned about finding the truth and getting rid of the bull and find ourselves a way of seeing truth. And seeing truth means that we know when others are using propaganda to try to change our minds rather than to find truth. It's a very important thing to do. Most of what I do on this show, by the way, has something to do with that concept in the way that I quote-unquote explain things, because I'm trying to get people to think well enough so that they can figure out what is or isn't truth in their own minds, not that I'm trying to convince them of a specific thing about anything as much as I want people to be thinking about it and be able to find truth themselves. So really, this is kind of the whole concept behind it. Okay, so national evils seem to be stemming more from the mental side of things, but they still use a lot of emotionality. It isn't like emotionality's been thrown out, well, now we're just going to switch to the mental. It's just they're trying to, the evil side of things is trying to link these two together. It's actually called, there's a word in it that it's called comma monastic thought in metaphysics. That's what it's referred to. And what does this mean? It means that it's a linking together of how someone emotionally feels, governing how they ultimately, in truth or non-truth, think. And that's not a good thing. That's never a good thing. You want to be able to detach somewhat from your emotional feelings while checking out for the truth in something. Not easy for human beings to do, and especially when there is a lot of propaganda that has been spilled around us. Some people call propaganda today spin, by the way. Just another name for something that is insidious and very negative. Okay, so that's at a national scale, and how is it represented in countries that are particularly, we'll call it, evil? Well, first of all, it is in almost every country. It probably is in every country to some extent. It's certainly part of the United States, so don't think that we are immune from this problem. We are not. But when it is the dominant way that a country functions, then it is clear that that country has turned to the dark side and could be considered like an evil country. Where do we find this most often? It's in countries that do not have democracy. And because am I saying it's only democracy that can counter evil? Because even in our country, we have democracy, but evil exists in some ways. But and is a very important part of this. The overall structure of the government tries to control the lives of the people through a, we'll say, attack on their minds and in their astral nature, through both propaganda and through emotional excitation that convinces them that the government is right and they shouldn't think about or try to change anything the government is doing. Now, this is the common thread. And where do we see this most often? Well, it's very strongly represented in countries that claim to have a communist system of government. It doesn't mean that communism is evil. It means that they use the name communist to hide behind this other thing, which is actually evil itself, in that they're trying to control the minds and the, we'll call it, the motives and emotions of the people that they have. And they also use a great weapon of evil, which is fear and terror. In other words, if you don't go along with the methods and thoughts of the government comes down extremely hard and in a very cruel way on individuals and even groups of people that are its citizens. And this is a big sign that evil is at work when that is taking place. And again, you find this joined in our world today, most commonly in countries that claim to be communist. But it isn't the it's not even by far the only name and only kind of government that can be evil. But nonetheless, it seems to have a common thing. And if you look at the countries that claim this, I'll start with the biggest, which is communist or Red China, and some people call it now the mainland China. Well, I like communist China because it says what it is. And, you know, they claim, oh, we've got different governments or different cities and different this. No, they don't. They got one government, and they make it look like they put a little window dressing on. There are some differences. The fact of the matter is, this is a government that does all the things that I mentioned. It forces its citizens to obey its commands. It restricts and even limits thought. It certainly forces people to function in the way that it chooses to function. And those that are against it are soon destroyed in one way or another. Their lives are taken over, or they could be even put in a gulag or put into some other terrible circumstance. And so the point is that when we see this sort of thing happening, we need to recognize what it is. It's evil, okay? Now, you might say, well, heck, there's billions of people. What are you going to... Yes, unfortunately, our world right now, if we take the largest country as an example, China, mainland China or Red China, is got a lot of evil in it. And it's a scary amount when you start adding up the numbers. Now, are all the citizens of that country evil? No. I would say most of the citizens of that country live in terror, though, of their own government. They may not admit to it, because part of evil's plan is not to just terrify populations, but to do so in ways that they deny the terror, and they live in a state of denial of the whole system that is forcing them to not think in truth and to not feel love. This they do through many methods, but the point is that they achieve them oftentimes. And as a group, then, the people are kind of like hypnotized, but they're hypnotized in a very negative way, and they don't notice, literally. They are in denial. They don't notice the terribleness that they're living within. They may not even talk about it, but it's there nonetheless. What other features, what other common elements are there to countries that are evil? Well, they either do one of two things in terms of religion. They either deny the existence of religion, because again, that's what evil does, or they promote only one religion, which oftentimes has a fanatic or limiting circumstance to itself. This is another common element to how to determine when a country may be profoundly evil in its structure of government. Now remember, just like the Chinese, as I was talking about, not all the Chinese are even close to evil. They just may be denying it. The vast number of them are not functioning in evil, but the government is. And that's the important thing to understand. We're talking about governments, and we're talking about those who seek to and have control over the vast numbers of the rest of the population. Okay, so where might we find that? Well, you know, obviously governments that do this promotion of a single religion are theocracies, but they are more than that. They are governments that have usually excluded the elements of all other religion in them. And those are not that common, but when you find them, you'll find elements of evil involved. And it's, again, going back to what I explained in the first segment. anyway, I could look at the clock, and I'm just yakking away here, and we're going fast. So we got to kind of jump into our next commercial, be a couple minutes, and I'll be back as soon as we have those done.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we had a caller right before I went off the air, for the last commercial. Some woman who called and was concerned about the question of the Cold War having to do with Iraq and Kuwait. Of course, I'm not sure that she was thinking the same way I was talking about the Cold War. Cold War was between the United States and the Soviet Union and its satellite countries. But nonetheless, it's important to understand what I'm referring to here is a concept. I'm giving you some examples of countries. But I'm not trying to just pick out, you know, a particular country as much as so that people can understand what evil is. Because, you see, once I think we all know what evil is, we can do something to change it, which is hopefully we'll get to that tonight. And I know I've been talking fast, but that's because I had a lot to say, I guess. I'll try to slow down a little bit for those of you who are having trouble. Just keep it up, you know, because I can yak pretty quick. Okay, so there are a number of ways of determining evil in terms of countries, and I've tried to enumerate a few of them. Countries that tend toward evil generally do not have a true regard for the life and welfare of the individual within their own borders. They may say they care about their people, but usually if they care about their people, they care about their people in terms of what it means to the government of the country to have people there so that they can use them to fight and to make money and to do things for the government. Whereas governments that recognize the rights of the individual and are concerned about those rights of individuals, regardless of whether they are democracies or not, tend to not be evil countries. even in cases of benevolent dictators that have true concern for their individual rights of people and individuals within their country, those countries would not, in my perspective, generally be classified as evil. That's why it's so hard for us to sometimes misunderstand this, particularly for those of us who are living in the United States. Here, it is a country of, you know, so much professing of freedoms that we believe that any country who doesn't profess that to that level is not functioning in goodness or light. And that isn't true, at least as far as being evil. Evil has its own stamp, and much that I'm trying to help you all to see, I hope I'm doing that. Now, we have some evils in this country, but that doesn't make our country evil. And even the best countries, of which we somewhat fall into, have some evils in them. We have problems that we need to be dealing with. But nonetheless, overall, and that's what I'm trying to say, overall as a country, certainly this country, the United States, is not evil, nor is many other countries. But there are still some that certainly are. When a country is exhibiting an evil tendency as a nation, it is important for us to be able to understand how to deal with evil. The first is to make sure that we expose in truth the areas that that country is functioning in evil, even if it costs us business, even if it makes some other countries that we are affiliated with uneasy, and even if it may lead us into some conflict. It's much better to do it now, because if we don't, the results are that since evil is seeking to be a destroyer of life, because that's God's growth, ultimately we will find ourselves in much worse circumstances. To be more specific, I will use Red China again. For those of you who aren't aware, Red China has been arming itself and directing most of its nuclear missiles towards us, of which it has a couple hundred to several hundred. And it is, besides that, using various strategies to try to manipulate both our economy, to steal most of our military secrets and other kinds of business secrets, and to, in general, destroy what is the freedoms and the betterments of our own country. Now, you might say, well, then why are we doing so much business with them? I mean, half, two-thirds of our manufacturing now comes from that one country. And why are we doing all these other things on the surface, and why aren't we being told about what's going on really behind the scenes in terms of us and Red China? They're developing weapons to destroy our satellite systems. At the same time, they've stolen secrets so they can build satellite systems and weapon systems to attack us from outer space. If you look at it from that standpoint, you would want to know, well, why isn't this on the news every day? And it's rarely ever on the news, and when it is, it's almost never there for more than a few minutes. It's because the government that we are living under is deliberately trying to play it down, because they are afraid. What are they afraid of? Well, they're afraid that we'll lose business, and we'll lose certain trading partners, and we'll all kinds of financial things will happen. Now, I'll tell you right now, if someone said, well, Niles, how about you become president for 6 months or something? I might just decide that we weren't going to be doing business with China anymore, and I wouldn't honor any of the debts. They have like $3.5 trillion of our debt or more. I just say, well, we're not going to pay it. Now, you might say, well, that's kind of crazy. Well, not really, because I would say this is a result of you stealing our technology, and you're doing this and that and so on, and we don't like it. Plus, you're also threatening Taiwan. You're going to come in and take them over within the next year or two, and we know you're going to do that. So that being the case, I would do that, and you might say, well, wouldn't that lead to a war? It might. I don't think so. I think what it would lead to is the the tremendous weakening of the government of Red China, tremendous weakening because they were going to a severe downward spiral because they are depending upon the business with the United States, and they also have to have those debts honored or they have no financial currency left. And so if we just say, we're not going to pay you, that's what I would say. You want to screw around with us, we're not going to pay you. You know, you want to attack our submarines and straits of whatever and do this or that. Yeah, we're just not going to, we're not going to do that. And, but I wouldn't attack them, not in a military sense. And the result could be, in a very quick order, that the evil in their country would become much more exposed. And it would weaken them from being able to, within a few years, actually attack us. I mean, in a military sense, besides financially and in other ways. Now, that's my idea. You may have a lot of other ideas. That's a pretty radical idea, by the way. I don't foresee any leader of the United States doing something like that. But generally speaking, as an example only, that's how you have to deal with an evil country. You can't deal with evil in the physical world. That's where we live right now. Through just words, you've got to unfortunately use some level of force. It doesn't have to be military force, but it has to be force nonetheless, because in this world, force is one of the ways that evil overcomes goodness. In the astral world, it's the exact opposite. You don't use force there. You just use confinement. Here, if you try to confine evil in this world, evil will always find a way to get around it and to come and do nasty things. So there's a completely different set of rules for the physical world. And one of those rules in terms of metaphysics is that you have to face evil head on, and you do have to use some level of force, not necessarily military, but you have to. And what I said was a very forceful thing, extremely forceful thing, and it has many corollaries to it, meaning other ways it would have to be implemented than just what I said to be effective. But it could be extremely effective if it were done correctly. And it's something to think about for the future leaders of our country. We are in grave danger from just this one country, but there are other countries that are also evil. One of its, we'll call it, friends near to it, bordering it, is North Korea. And for years we have placated North Korea because the South Koreans want us to, because those are their friends and relatives that live there. Heck, I wouldn't want to see them living under terrible conditions. But sometimes you have to do what you have to do, and we could have long ago sank the government of North Korea if we wanted to. We chose not to. Grave mistake. They now have 10, 12 nuclear weapons. Soon they may be attacking, who knows, Japan or whatever. And I mean, you've got to be considering the long-term results of allowing evil to continue to fester and grow, particularly in a world like this one. So these are things that I hope you'll think about and consider as we talk about the more world scale. And I want to try to get to that in just a few minutes here. I'm mostly talking about this on a national scale, but how does this affect us as an entire planet? Well, right now, we're at a crossroads. In the next 5 years, things are either going to go very much worse, or there may be some breakthrough and some improvement. If they go very much worse, what's going to take place is that evil is going to take hold in every country on some, we'll say, critical level. And there could be freedoms lost, there could be love lost in almost every corner of the planet. It could get so bad that what we call civilization may just literally be destroyed from its inside out. Now, crises are likely to happen, but they're going to be much worse with this foundation of evil so spread. And does that mean that I'm a doomsayer and that we're going to, you know, the world's going to end? No, I think that billions of people could die, and I think that life as we understand it could change radically, because the civilizations themselves, if they are dark enough, will just shatter and fall apart. Remember, evil doesn't really care about the rights of the individual. And it doesn't even that much care about the people that exist around it, except as it can control them and get something done by them that's destructive for towards God. So it's very important for us to understand that this is becoming a worldwide and very serious problem. At any rate, I'm out of time for right now. I want to mention that on Sunday, I've got a program that's going to be on 1170 a.m. in Massachusetts, Providence, Boston area. And if you can't get it by not being in that area, you can hook into WDISAM.com radio. And I'm going to be doing a show on Where We Go When We Die and Why, Part 3, from 1 to 2 p.m. if you're on the Pacific Coast, and from 4 to 5 on the East Coast, or anywhere in between. So listen into that. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.